she was not pushed in a female direction or the standard female direction. She wouldn't allow it. And it didn't change her experience in life.
It's giving girl power.
It was giving so much girl power.
Welcome to another episode of Stay Rooted with your hosts, Stephanie and Lauren. Pull up a chair because you're attending the virtual mom support group.
Light your sage because we are going through it
and growing through it.
And we're always rooting for you.
Are you feeling okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel good. Let me just see if Luke texts me back.
He did. I love your energy.
He's good.
You're just feeling good? I'm feeling unwell, but we're going to do this.
Yeah, it's just like it has been this last week or so. Like, you know, every time we try to get here and then it's like it keeps kicking you back down. And it's like everything I want to do to get here, I keep doing the right things. It looks so good. And then like the last minute, like your kid jumps off of the play kitchen.
Yeah.
Right when you least expect it.
Right when you least expect it, you find a dead squirrel in your backyard.
It's just not what anybody asked for on a Sunday afternoon.
I have to tell you, because I haven't told you yet, and you've been at my house for a little bit, but so it was decent out today, right?
It wasn't raining.
It wasn't raining, and it's March something.
Yeah.
And it's almost Easter, so we're cramming that into March. We're like, we can't even talk about leprechauns.
No,
we don't
I
have
know.
Time. We're They're just, done.
It's
The bunny is here.
The bunny's here.
So
once they're at the mall, you got to stop talking about the leprechaun.
Yes, and he's
That's
in.
That's mall math.
Yeah, Peter Rabbit's in the mall.
Yeah.
So charging $40 a sitting. But we're in the yard today because it's like above freezing and we have northern altitudes.
Yeah.
So we're outside and we're raking and we're having a good time. And then all of a sudden, we're not having a good time.
What happened?
So my husband's raking and we have like a small little fire going on of just like the big... Like, the trees in my yard have lived many a lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know how far back, but...
There's a lot of rings in there.
They've been here longer than the white men.
Yes.
I think.
And that's, like, the longest.
That's the longest. So, they're so big, but they're, like, their branches fall, and their branches are huge. So, my husband made a small fire, and we're, like, trying to rake, and we're moving that big pile of leaves that he like did in the fall but never bagged up, and we all have one.
That pile's so big. Where do you keep yours? Like, what do
in
you do
in the
with
middle
your-
of my lawn?
You're like, it's the centerpiece of the of
like millennials live here. We don't care about the grass. The grass is a scam. Everyone told us.
I feel that way as well. My husband, this is where he falls into like a little bit of like he has a little boomer energy, because when it comes to his lawn,
seen the checkerboards.
You know, he's out there and he's in it. Like, I honestly think my husband, he could be so happy and so fulfilled being the man that mows the lawn for the Boston Red Sox.
Okay.
Like, that would fill him with great pride.
I've seen your lawn, and I support that, but my husband is just trying to get by enough that my dad doesn't say something.
Yeah, well, that's He's always, like that's... That's the bar.
He's
that's
like,
the bar.
My boomer father-in-law is going to come over, and he's going to mention if there's dead leaves in the middle of the yard.
Absolutely.
So we're all having a good time. We have, like, you know how the outdoor toys are still kind of dirty right now?
Oh, yeah.
But
you're wearing jackets. You're not that close to
you're
them.
You're, like, wiping off the wet leaves. So all of a sudden, my husband says, Lauren, take the kids inside. And I'm like, no, why?
You're like, I just got them outside.
I'm like, we're breathing the fresh air. Like, our allergies are killing us, but it feels fresh.
Yes.
It feels crispy.
Yes.
So he's like, take them inside. I'm like, what's going on? So, like, we have a little sidebar conversation, but not too far, because there is a squirrel carcass in my yard. Like, at the bottom of one of these gigantic trees.
How ominous.
So we had
You think
some,
it took a bad fall?
So we had some squirrel drama. Remember I told you, like, me and my mom were like getting our kicks from watching the squirrels.
Were you like trying to decipher?
This one seemed to have died from injuries of a fall, maybe.
Cause of death.
We hope.
Yeah.
We didn't even know. We're like, we're looking at each other, and this is the part
you
of
know,
adulthood that you're like, do we call somebody?
It's
like,
just not often that a squirrel falls is the only thing. You know, like,
is the animal control going to be annoyed if
I
call?
When the squirrels start falling like that might be like my last straw. Like when the squirrels lose their balance, like that's enough for me.
So this is the thing though. To go. He has lived like a long winter under here. He's like nature has like mummified him a little bit. Yeah. Like he still has a tail and stuff, but he's crispy. Oh,
he was what's the word I'm looking for?
He was winterized. He was mummified.
You know.
He was preserved somehow.
Rigor mortis had set in.
Oh, yeah, something like months ago. Yeah. Maybe before the first snowfall.
See, my kid, Nora, is the kind of kid that would be like, could I touch it?
But this is the thing. Like, I had a choice to make because I'm like, okay, he wants me to bring in the children. But, like, also, this is the circle of life. Well, before I even have a chance to react, because, of course, my first instinct is, like, get the baby so she doesn't touch it.
So she doesn't eat it.
So my almost seven-year-old now.
Yeah, I know.
Almost seven-year-old. Looks at my husband and she goes, it's the wild, Dad. Things die every day.
You know?
She goes, I bet you at least one animal in the wild dies a day. And, like, this isn't a big deal.
And, like...
So I look at her, and I'm like, what a queen. Like, yeah. I am, like...
You're, like, a little emotional about it.
I'm, like, planning the burial of this unnamed squirrel. Like, you're nobody... Like,
I think I have some dried herbs inside.
Nobody's loved him till right now, but, like, I'm ready to. I'm ready to give him a name at his rest. Yes. My daughter, right to science, she's like, honestly, like, animals die every single day.
They die every single day.
So then she's like, it's not a big deal. So my husband's like trying to not make it a big deal. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to get a shovel. She's like, you can use my shovel. I'll help you find a shovel. So then she gets up to him and she's like, I actually think this is quite interesting. And, you know, it's not a big deal for us to move him either. Yeah. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, good for you, because honestly, freaks me out a little bit.
It freaks me out so much. So as we're moving him, I'm like, I love this for her because she has such a circle of life look at it. Well, we get back inside and she's like, Dad, I just want you to know that, like, it's not a big deal when wildlife dies because there is the circle of life.
It is the,
she's continuing.
If there's one thing the Lion King taught us, it is about the circle of life. That's for sure. And it's funny.
I just felt like it was a very, like, we had two choices and we decided to tackle it head on. And of course, her generation has already accepted that this is, you know, she put her empathy in a place that was reasonable. And
we're so upfront with our kids. That's the thing, is that we are more direct, I think, and we're more like willing to give an explanation maybe than our parents were. So like we've had similar things, and Nora, like, if it were our pet, that would be different, but there's been times when we've found, like, a dead bird outside in, like, decent condition. You know, it's not, like, oozing or anything like that. And Nora's very, like, interested in it. And, like, I don't know. I think it's a place that we've got them by talking about things, and now they like looking at dead birds and squirrels, and I guess that's okay as long as they're not killing them.
I completely agree. As long as, like, the research is scientific and the specimen has passed on its own.
It's not for me, though, because that's where it kind of falls into the bug thing, where, like, things rolling around lifeless makes my mouth feel weird, and I just, like, I simply cannot. But Nora would be out there with Lucas. If we found a dead squirrel in the yard, I guarantee they'd be out there figuring it out together.
And then my husband was like, it's hollow. And then I was like, oh my God. Like, and I kept saying, like, should we call the animal control? And he's like, I don't know that they'd do anything.
The way I didn't need that adjective.
Hollow.
Hollow.
So that's an update about how my spring is springing.
Springing. And honestly, we've been out in the yard with our live birds a lot lately. Like, I think that was a common theme of our weekend. Our weekend has been, like, busy, but in, like, a subtle way. So, like, our weekend started off with a sleepover situation, which was very cool for the girls.
I thrusted you into a sleepover.
And, like, Lauren and I quickly realized, like, and we realize this often, that we are, like, we are children in adult bodies, and we're, like, talking the day of, and we're like, oh, did you mean today or tomorrow? And she's like, LOL, I think today. And I'm like, LOL, that's fine with me. Like, the way that we parent, like, is, I just sometimes have these moments where I think, I'm like, this is just so not, like, our mother's mothering. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah, it's very loosey-goosey. But I also feel like me and you have fallen into this routine that we send each other voice memos because it's quicker, and you don't really have to be, like, at your phone. You can just kind of
say it into an AirPod and it gets to you.
The problem is,
there's no documents.
There's no documentation. You're like, I want to say she said the third Friday in May.
It's the sketchiest form of communication. And
like, even if we were to like actually write it down, like we still could get it wrong. So for us to leave it up to that much like human error is honestly irresponsible, but somehow it worked out and we had like a really cool sleepover.
And then we just acted like we were cool surprise parents. Yeah. Surprise. It's a slumber party.
To all of us. But we had let in for the night and Nora was super excited. And I will say, like, for some reason, one of the themes, and it's been one of the themes of our life recently, is that we're very much in, like, and I know you are too, a musical era where, like, we are being the movies that Nora's into right now and the shows she's into, and we're singing about the things that we're doing.
Oh, yes.
But the other thing about us is that we're also playing Harry Potter Legacy, so now we're combining those things and doing it in a British accent. But the funny thing about that is that our daughters kind of know what an accent is, but they also kind of don't. So, like, the three of us were doing this bit for, honestly, I'd say 3 hours, where no matter what we said to each other, we were singing it in an accent. And it did not get old, I tell you. It did not get old.
So I told you that Lennon has been doing this bit now that I think it stems from her musical theater class.
Yes.
But she'll first make up, like, a little dance move, right? And it's got like a few steps, and then she's like, I am a fox who barely walks and I talk. And you're like, wow, this is like really.
You're like, this is going somewhere.
This has some stage
razzle and dazzle.
And she's like, and honestly, maybe it's a little bit of Cats too. That like she has this very like theatrical way about her, and she loves the bit. So she makes everything this like.
Well, and then if there's something
British
about our two girls.
Musical theater comedy.
Is that they're going to be a little competitive about it. So, you know, there's a fox wearing socks. And Nora's like, but it was a goose and it was wearing shoes, you know, and they're going back and forth. And it's this whole thing. And it just starts getting to a place where I'm like, how did we even get here? But honestly, like, we just had such a cool time. It was a very low key hang. We were like, let's have DoorDash work for us. Like, where we were doing a smarter, not harder, low-key kind of hang. And we had a great time. But there were a few things that, like, your kid said that obviously were funny to me. And
I can't wait to hear them.
So, as you know, when you take the kids for the sleepover, you will have less work when they're hanging out together until it comes time for bed. Then that's where you have to really, like, show your skills to get those two to sleep together. Because it's not easy.
Yeah, it's two children with a bedtime, like, just revolting silently. But also, like, very loud.
And their bedroom is, like, kind of hyped up. And, like, maybe you wrap some string lights in there because you were trying to pull a vibe. So, anyways, we wind up in Nora's room, the three of us. And I'm like, you know, let's just wind down. Let's watch some TV in your room. I'm not saying you have to go to sleep yet, but let's kind of just wind it down.
Yeah.
And so, like, the three of us are just laying down and we're watching Is It Cake? Because it just felt like something that we could all agree on. And then all of a sudden, Lennon was like, Stephanie, are you awake? And I was like, yeah, I'm awake. What's up, Len? She's like, nothing. My mom would have been asleep already.
Bitch.
And I was dying, and I was like, honestly, like, Nora goes to your house and, like, calls me old, so I need Lennon to say something, too, you know?
Her and my husband.
I can't be the only old, boring mom.
Her and my husband just have this bit that I fall asleep during everything, and it's true. Like, when my bones settle, that's it.
That's it.
An object in motion stays in motion.
Until it stops.
And then I'm dead.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's usually before, like, the beginning credits.
Yeah, but she was just cracking
me up. I love that.
That's
sweet of her. Yeah. Thank you.
No, it was really sweet. But we had a really good time. We had a really good hang. It led into a birthday party. And then today we just had a full day of, like, errands, which was, like, you know, it was what it was.
Yeah. Well, I fell victim to the allergies.
Yes.
And the reason that we had the slumber party is because me and my husband had a date night.
I can't.
And of course, I started to feel like my most congested as the date night was.
Of course. It's like your biannual date night, and they're going to be like, you are congested.
Your eyes are so itchy, they barely open.
You have child's care? How about a headache? You know?
Yeah, like.
It's like.
It's get just, up.
Yeah.
So my husband and I are like trying to get ready, and I'm like taking all the Xyzol I can and Flonase and doing all of my witchcraft.
It's really romantic.
Eucalyptus. I smell of eucalyptus. And you're like, yeah, drop her off. So we drop her off. And then we're like, shit, like the place where we're going, there's a bridge that just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Like Rhode Island's bridge.
Which
just
I
said,
can't even think about the no fact that sometimes bridges just stop working.
They just stop working. So let that settle in your stomach. So anyways, we drive over that bridge.
Yeah.
But we're like, we don't have time to get food. So my husband and I, being the little tiny raccoon couple that I guess we're like a raccoon and a fox.
Yes.
My husband would be a nice little fox. We've been watching some Zootopia. So we are like we get Burger King because we're like, fuck it. We need to get there on time.
Yeah.
We're able to get a coffee beforehand. I allegedly doze off during the comedy show.
Says who?
So we went to a comedy show.
The jury's still out.
We saw Anthony Jeselnik, which if you don't know who he is, he's very funny. He has a podcast called JRVP, which I don't know what it stands for. but my husband loves him, and it was his Christmas present to him, and he's a very cynical humor. Like, he uses Glaslow's humor? I don't know. Kenny can
fact
insert his
don't.
Fact check.
Yeah.
But so it's basically just like when something's so bad that like you poke fun right at it. So
okay.
He makes like jokes about like pregnant women and the trans community. And like he's just very direct and he's
yes.
very like eye-opening, but it's fresh. So we had a good time. And
I
the opener
that.
For him was a female and she was hilarious. Her name was Kelly Ryan. But fast forward, and I mean, we woke up and I was just feeling so damn congested.
I know.
And you had our daughter.
Yes,
and we
did.
Were like, you know what? We're going to lay in bed with this
yeah.
one kid for a while.
I was like, literally, our plan was to sit and continue to play the Harry Potter Legacy. That was like, honestly, starting that game with them there was so nice because they were both so into it because it was so new that like it kind of relieved a lot of the pressure of the evening of like what to do and the time.
Yeah.
So as soon as the morning happened, they were like, we want to play the game. We want to listen to this song. We want to do this in the morning. We want to do that. And then all of a sudden, Lennon looks at me and she goes, your to-do list is getting kind of long for tomorrow, isn't it? And I was like, you know what, Lennon? It is getting kind of long.
She loves to point out that you are biting off more than you can
chew.
Oh,
of course.
She's like, such a
yeah,
logistical
she's like,
gal.
Prove it. And that's why we don't tell our kids about the sleepovers until, like, the day of.
Yeah, because
they will hold
us
damn well accountable.
She's going to call you on every single thing you said.
Yeah.
And that's the funny thing is that once we kind of rolled off of your house, there was really no agenda, and we kind of fell into this cozy weekend where we took drives, and we ate at home, and we got little treats out, and we really didn't do much, but it was very fun. We did a couple crafts.
Yes.
I felt like absolute garbage on Saturday night. But as we were driving away from your house, Lennon mentioned really something really cute and something very, like, relatable to me. And she said that she woke up in the middle of the night and she was a little, like, scared
yeah.
and frazzled because she thought it had been, like, a long time, which she'll do that at home. She'll come down at, like, 10:30 and she'll be like,
they've slept for 30
I thought that
minutes.
I've slept for so long
yes.
and it's only been an hour. And then she's kind of startled that it's dark out and we're not in our bed. So
yes.
she, like, panics. So she said she found you. And then she's like, and then I asked Stephanie if she could just, like, rub my leg like you used to when I was little because that used to really help me. And she'll always say that, like,
yes.
when she's having trouble
that's
sleeping.
That's, like, her thing she falls back to for
and
comfort.
She'll always say, remember when I was little.
And you're like, I did this Wednesday.
3 days ago when you were little.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I got back to sleep. And I'm like, well, isn't that such a nice thing
yes.
to be so comfortable in somebody else's home
yes.
with somebody else that you can have them get you back to where you need to be
yes.
to, like, go to sleep. And she was like, yeah, I really love that. So I was just trying to, like, make that relative to her. So, like, I was telling her, I'm like, well, you know, your Dinga's mom is like my family.
Yes.
Because she's known
that was
me.
Your house that you could go.
She's known me since I was a kid and since I was silly before I grew up to be
yes.
an adult. So she kind of loves me in a different way and
yes.
knows, like, a lot about me more than you know if you just met me as an adult.
Yes.
So I was saying that those type of people become your family. And she was like, yeah, Stephanie's my family. Oh. And I was like, I know she is. So it was just, it was really sweet. And then, like I said, so we were all like kind of vibing off of that. Yeah. And we took the long way home. And then from there, I just fell victim to my allergies for the day. Yes. But we did, I have to mention before we go into our real topic, yeah. I am a consumer, okay?
I have been consuming as well.
One thing about Easter is that it's in March this year for no fucking reason. Yes. Like, the world's like, you know what would be stressful? If you don't even have time to plan for Easter. I feel
like the characters of the holidays need to schedule better because we need more than like a week off in between like activities.
20,000%. But you know? I was like, I don't want to do eggs with the dye this year. Like, I just hate that. And Alaska is a splasher. Like, yes. She loves the sensory response of the water just slapping her in the face. Yes. And there's something about those little dye tablets that make me uncomfortable to dye the eggs in. So I fell victim to the egg mazing. Okay. Ooh. And if you know what this is, then you have probably ridden the aisles of Target. You've seen in the middle, it's like this weird egg that you put batteries in, and it has this little spinner that it spins the egg, okay? Ooh. And then it comes with some, like, off-brand Sharpies, okay? They're Sharpies, so please have a magic eraser somewhere nearby. That's the only trigger warning.
That's the tip.
All right? So you buy the magic eraser with it, or, like, a vinegar rub, something that can get it off. But it is a Sharpie, just so you know. And you just... You literally let the egg spin and your kid holds the marker on it and it makes beautiful little stripes.
Ooh.
It was $20, but it was the best $20 I've ever spent. Yes. And then we glued googly eyes onto the eggs and we said, Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
It's probably
Love
time
the Bodwins.
To start Christmas shopping.
Yeah, exactly.
What and should happy I do Hanukkah. Next? I missed every local egg hunt that there was, but I got the egg mazing. So
that's all that matters. I also found, I've consumed a craft thing, and I don't remember, I want to say, who was the last person that brought things to my house? I can't remember, but what they brought.
Who last brought the presents?
It wasn't I, was it? But, okay, so this was also found in the aisles of Target. You know that aisle that's like the arts and crafts, but like the kid project-y kind of aisle, like next to the school supplies?
Mondo Llama.
So they had a Crayola color chemistry, and so this, I want to say, was running about $29.99, if I had to guess. Something in that range.
Okay.
But what I will say is this thing, my kid, for some reason, she found out that, like, in school, sometimes people make volcanoes and they explode, you know? So, yes. Like, we've had to do the little bottle rockets. We've done volcanoes and stuff. This kit, it comes with, like, all these different cool little, like, dyes, little ingredients, things to do, like... make your own little volcano and do a tiny little explosion. It has, like, color mixing strips and just, like,
she's a chemist.
And it's, like, each little thing that you can do in there takes you, like, you know, 10 minutes to do. Like, they're reasonable. Like, we would sit down and do one, two, or three of them. And it's, like, a fun thing to do where, like, everything goes back in a box that it actually fits in at the end. But it's, like, science meets crafting.
We love that.
It's a save-the-day thing.
It's so
you know?
Discovery.
So that's my consuming...
We did. We did the Mondo Llama wind chime, which I highly recommend.
Like,
if you're gonna make one more friendship bracelet and that's gonna put you over the edge, try the Mondo Llama wind chime because they still get to bead. Because for some reason, these 7-year-olds will have you beaten like this is a sweatshop.
And like. They act like it's about them, but then why are we making the bracelets, you know?
We are the ones shoveling out those bracelets, so you might as well make a nice little wind chime for your porch.
100%.
And that rolls us into our topic somehow. So we are here to review a movie because it's been a minute.
It has been a minute.
And there was new cinema.
There was. And like
nominated.
Honestly, Luke and I, we do like to like... gander at an award show, and usually we record it and then we go back to it so we can fast forward to like the things that we like. And this movie was coming up over and over again, and eventually Lauren and I were like,
yeah,
I think we gotta
Kenny and I do not have cable, so we just watch the TikToks that eventually feed us most of the cinema that was the award show.
Of course,
they show us what we need to see. So Emma Stone's acceptance speech on behalf of this movie. I thought was like enough to want to watch the movie.
It was inspiring.
So the Rudy's review.
Poor things. I mean, I'm into this movie. I just want to start by saying that.
I am so into this movie. And I have to first say that my first thoughts on this movie is that, like, Frankenstein.
Yes.
Frankenstein vibes.
It's Frankenstein meets, like, weird fairy tale meets, like, coming of age story.
So I'm calling it steampunk Victorian.
Ooh.
Because I think that that's really steampunk, what it is, right?
So the fashion is fashioning, first of all. It's, like, it's a good movie to look at, and it's, like, a thought-provoking movie, so it tickles all of the fancies.
And when we watch a movie that's been, like, critically acclaimed, yeah, you know, when the Academy has gotten involved.
When the Academy has also watched it, I'm like, we are. I really usually watch, like, stupid movies.
But we start, like, breaking it down a lot. So we're like, okay, the color scheme. Yes. And, like, and the cinematography music. And the camera movement.
There's
and
a lot of layers.
Yes. And it was very, like, 80s Frankenstein steampunk, but, like, a little Victorian. But I do have, right off the bat, a prediction that this is the future, I think. I mean, I know that the book puts it in the 19th century.
Yes.
But I think this depiction is very futuristic. It's dystopian.
Well, it's funny. It is, because when I first started watching it, you know, when you're watching something, you're watching it, but you occasionally look away from the screen, like, but I was watching this movie overall. But for a moment, I just remember thinking, like, what time period is this? Because at first I was like, is this futuristic? You know, because in a way it could be. But then I saw that it was, like, time stamped and whenever it was. And I was like, okay. But, like, you're right. It does have that futuristic dystopian energy when you're watching.
The time zone is very ominous. And I feel like that makes it, like, very classic, like a Frankenstein sci-fi, because you're like, where are we?
Well, it starts and you're just, like, a little uncomfy.
You are so uncomfy right from the get-go. And I have to say that it's very just, like, everything on the screen is so black and white, so dramatized. So there's just, like, this very clear-cut, scientific, like, you are looking at an experiment at first.
Exactly. So I think right away, we start and we see the main character, Bella, falling off of the bridge or something like that. So we know
from the back.
From the back, yes. I think. Exactly. And then we pretty much are led to assume that this scientist finds her. And in some way, which they do not, like, immediately say, he brings her back to life. But she's, like, she's infantile. Like, infantile.
The first thing I said is, why is this woman acting like Alaska?
I know. No. Literally, there were times.
That was the first thing I said. There's this time where she's in the hallway and she has her.
Is it the
plates? No, when she has her hand on the man's face that she's standing up. And then she just starts whacking him in the face.
No. Like,
he's like, what is going on?
When Bella, like, in the very beginning, because she's very, like, I'm saying she's, like, she, you can tell that, like, she's developmentally younger than what she's appearing physically. So she's standing there and she's breaking plates and she's cracking up and I'm like, there's Lukey. Like, at first I'm like, I can see this. Like, you know what's going on here.
Yeah.
And the music is clunky. Like, it's just, you're feeling really weird and heavy and, like, harsh at first.
Yeah. And I feel like you're supposed to be feeling how she's feeling. Like, you're not really seeing anybody's side thoughts.
Yes.
You're just seeing everything really for what it is. Like, you said, the music's clunky.
It's clumsy.
You're hearing bits of conversations.
Yes.
It's a very clumsy look at the world.
Yes.
But she's finding, like, her little, like, sensory inputs of smashing the plates.
Yes, absolutely.
And smacking people in the face.
Bella is a certified sensory seeker.
And dare I say that, like, as Bella starts to talk, she has that blind confidence.
Yes.
Like, she goes into things that she's just, like, blindly confident, like a toddler.
Yes.
Like, she's very just, like, I'm doing this.
Yes. Like, anything that she feels, she says as she feels. And immediately I'm like, I like Bella. Like, I like her. And so you kind of, at first, see a sense of a relationship with her and God, which God is what she calls the man that she lives with. Like, at first, we're kind of like, what's going on here? But then God ends up hiring this, I guess, like, another research scientist or something, pretty much to study Bella.
It's his Igor.
It's, yes, exactly.
Right?
If you've seen the movie, then you know.
Yeah.
So then he comes in and he kind of takes over and he spends a lot of time with Bella. And you hear them sidebarring and they're kind of like, you know, she's developing at like a fast rate. Like she's learning 15 new words a day. And like slowly I feel like even within the first few minutes of the movie, because this is a long movie, like you're in it for the long haul.
The movies are very long now.
I texted Lauren at first. I'm like, Lauren, I'm like, do I have to? Like, and usually it's the other way around, but she's like, no, do it.
And like, I am watching like three viewings of these movies, like to make sure that I absorbed everything. Because they're so long and there's so much information.
Yes.
But yeah, so she's growing at a rapid speed.
Yeah.
Her hair is, her nails are, like, yes. She's just very, like, she's moving better, like, yes. You can tell. And then there's something about Bella that you really realize, like, she just does not have the filter that anybody else has. She does not care about her nudity.
No.
She does not care about, what does she say? She's having herself at the table.
Yes. Bella, shame does not exist for Bella.
No.
She does not feel shame. She is driven towards what feels good to her in the purest of senses. And the thing I love about this movie and Bella is that she encapsulates what it's like if you take away the societal standards of what's like okay to do and you just do and say what is true and feels right and feels good. And in that way, she's just like, she's pure, and you know?
So that's, like, my biggest theme for this whole movie, mm-hmm. I think, is, like, the difference between societal innocence, because as Bella learns more, which I don't want to hop ahead, but as she learns more, she says, like, that's not society polite, or that's not polite for society, whatever she says. And
everything she says.
But that innocence that society sees and like the primal pure innocence of just the human experience are not the same.
No.
They are not the same. And you see that so like violently in this movie.
And the way that she eats and the way that she acts and the way that she talks, everything is like not polite, but it's just because she's being honest.
Yes, she's being so
honest.
And
she's without shame.
And she's quickly molded. Like you're learning at this amplified speed because you're not getting the childhood. You're not getting the smoke and mirrors. You're not getting the like dulled down, hyped up experiences that you might as a kid. She's just getting thrusted into this adult
woman life.
Womanhood.
Yes.
And she's just
with a woman's body.
And I think that her long-term memory and her short-term memory being the same thing makes her judge society at such a
face value.
And
which is so interesting to me because
incredibly interesting.
And in many ways, like, that is also, like, not, like, in just in this very beginning, I feel like it makes me think of Lukey in a way because Lukey takes the world, and I could say Alaska as well, probably, I'd say at this stage, takes the world very much at face value and very much they live on impulse and it terrifies us, but they're just, they don't really know what that shame is. You know, they do what feels right to them, and that's where there is this, like, childness and Bella, and it's just, I don't know, the contrast is just very interesting, and it gets more and more interesting as the movie goes.
Yeah, and I think it's really funny when she's still in the experiment, because it's obviously very controlled, and her routine is very, like, structured, so when she's having those little tantrums, like, you literally just, you see a child, like,
yes.
I kept saying, like, why is she acting like Lasky? Lasky would do that. And then, of course, you find out that the experiment is that she has a baby brain.
Yes.
That she was a pregnant woman.
Who, I guess, she was trying to commit suicide. Or she
unalived
did. She unalived herself.
But then this scientist, Godwin. Who is God.
Found her. She has an alive baby, I guess, still in her belly. And he is this mad scientist who's like, you know what? What am I to do? I found a dead body with an alive baby. And the only rational thing for this mad scientist to do is to put it inside of her.
Which, what a not at pro-choice. The only rational thing to do with this live baby and dead woman is to take the brain out of the
baby.
Put
them together.
And put it right into the woman and reanimate her. He's yeah. Like, it's such an obvious choice.
That's when it was, like, truly, like, Frankenstein. So you kind of, like, you see that happen, and
it's
I think
just occipital brain. It's yes, not, like, it's not it's even not that
serious.
Brain.
They yeah. left the front, most of it.
But I will say that when Bella is, like, growing up with... Because Bella grows up yeah. with God as her dad.
Yeah.
Right? And God is a mad scientist. He is, like, ripping organs out of people. He is... I mean, he put her baby's brain into her. So you have to say that he's a very, like, lacks empathy, lacks emotion kind of guy.
Yes. But you know when we say we're still angry at our parents for what their parents did to them? Well, we learn a little bit about Godwin and how his dad was literally torturing him as a kid for science.
Literally.
And, like, so then you look at Godwin and you're like, oh, he loves Bella. He treats her great in comparison. But, like, still, she's somewhat, like, a prisoner of his for some time and, yes. like, a creation of his.
And she is going to stab a cadaver, like, in the background because yes. she doesn't even put emotion no. to that kind of thing. And that's, he's, like, raising a little surgeon. Like, yes. he was raised as a little surgeon. He's raising yes. her, but with love, because when she is absent, he raises her with no empathy and no emotion, and it's very logistical, and yes. he keeps saying that it's a experiment, and it can't be, like, tampered with emotion. Yes. But when she is absent, he has so many emotions about her absence, because yes. he has grown to love her in his weird Frankenstein Godwin way.
He has. And, like, so I guess if we, like, kind of summarize what happens here, pretty much the guy that I'm blanking on his name, but the scientist that comes in to pretty much just observe Bella and note her.
Oh, wait, I know his what's name. His name is Max.
Max. He begins to get feelings for Bella, which...
He's a baby scientist.
He's a baby scientist, and he falls in love with Bella. So it becomes this whole thing of, like, him being in love with Bella, and Bella's like... Okay, but then enter, what's his
Duncan.
Name? Duncan Wedderburn. Is it Duncan Wedderburn? And Duncan Wedderburn comes in, and he is a hot ticket. I'm blanking on his name, right? Mark, is it Mark Ruffalo? Is that who plays him?
That might be who plays him.
He's in 13 Going on 30. If you know, you know. And in that movie, I had such a crush on him. So now I'm seeing him as Duncan Wedderburn, which a complete opposite character, but I love him nonetheless. And I just have to say, like...
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo. Dunk Wedderburn is the, like, most out of pocket, out of his mind, like, asshole ever, but I absolutely loved watching him. He is phenomenal.
He is gluttonous. He is greedy. He is conniving. Yes. He is a bad person.
he's a bad person.
But he is a ticket to freedom for yes. Bella. And that's what Bella keeps seeking, because Bella is a possession yes. to God.
Yes.
And she knows that. She's like, I'm a thing to you. And then she's like, I don't want to be a thing. I want to go out. And you're like, this is not going to go well.
That was what, like, was so interesting to me. And that's where you kind of, like, you look at him and you're like, you've kept her here. But then she asks to leave and you're like, sure.
But God is her dad. And God is her dad. And he's like, she must go spread her wings.
Spread her wings.
But he also says that this is an experiment. And if she is angry, like, she's just going to be miserable and yeah. nothing's going to come of this.
Yes.
And Max is like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, because Max, dude, like, meanwhile, like, proposes to her and she's like, I'll marry you. But first, I'm going to go have fun with this guy. And one of my favorite parts, so Bella decides that she's going to leave with Duncan Wedderburn.
She loves him.
She loves him. And she's like, I'm going to go do furious jumping with Duncan. Yes. So she finds that out. She tells Max straight up, like, I'm going to go. And she says, goodbye later, Dove. I will see you after grand adventure. And she... puts him out. What do they keep using in there with the handkerchief to, like, make people...
Chloroform.
Chloroform.
But we have to say, we missed a scene that, like, she pleasures herself at the table. Oh, yes. She
and this
keeps
is
saying,
like,
that she's having herself.
Having herself, enjoying herself, something along those lines.
Making herself happy.
Yes.
So she finds out how to masturbate with an apple.
Yes, with an apple.
And it is a whole scene. And
well,
this-
she's literally at the dinner table, or, like, lunch. I want to say, like, lunch table.
And her little, the maid is an unsung hero because I forget her name, but she is just like, she is so sassy with her.
She is.
And she's like, you're not, she's like, just not nice to her.
No, but like, she takes no offense to it because she couldn't.
Yes. But you know? she is having herself at the table, yes. But she just knows that it makes her feel good.
That's it.
And that's all she wants.
That's
she
all that matters.
She just wants to feel good. So yes. She is so hyper-focused on that she does the furious jumping.
Yes.
Which is the sex.
With the sex with Duncan Wedderburn.
Duncan Wedderburn.
And she says, you know what? This is like the most fun I've ever had. I'm going to go do this, and then I'm going to come back to my later dove.
And
you'll be my later dove. And it's so wedding, matter of fact.
But the wedding contract was like very binding because yes. Godwin wanted to have like full control over them. So Duncan's like, you should not sign that. Yes. That's a bad move.
That's bad.
But she wants freedom. She goes with Duncan because yes. he's telling her. And everyone's just like chill except for Max. He gets the chloroform. and everyone's just like, it's fine. But Duncan takes her and now is gaining possession of her on his own.
Yes.
He is very possessive of her, and she is breaking Duncan's heart full time.
Yes.
Because she does not have the attachments to sex that he has.
She does not. And there is this common theme throughout the movie, like within the scenes that we've seen and within the scenes that we haven't talked about, where repeatedly people try to take advantage of Bella. People try to make a victim of Bella. People try to make a possession of Bella. But Bella cannot be broken mentally, and she cannot, like, I don't know. There's something about her where they keep trying to make it her, like, a victim, and she just refuses. She's yeah. like, no, like, I'm just going to do this way. I'm not going to do this. And she always gets her way out of the situation, like, pretty much unscathed.
So when you're looking at her like a experiment, like he keeps saying there's no evidence base. Yes. So like her lack of knowing love,
yeah.
the way that she was raised, makes her just like this fucking rock of a person. Yes. She's not empathetic. Things roll right off
of her. She has no trauma.
She has no trauma. She's not reading other people's emotions.
No experiences.
Right? She takes everything that you say at face value.
She just knows what feels good, and that's what she goes after. She doesn't... There are funny parts, though. There's a part where, like, at first she's very, like, she's very into Duncan because he makes her feel good.
Yes.
And so she loves him.
And her expression of happy is so outward. Like, even when there's yes. drama, she kind of does, like, that toddler, like, yes. clapping.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because she's excited by it. And how much do our children love conflict,
yes.
right?
Yes.
She is excited by the conflict. She's like, oh, my goodness, he's getting punched. And I like the fight scenes because yes. they're very yes. animated and, like,
he's so good. Pokey. They're so pokey. And there's just funny parts because they wind up, what happens, he ends up pretty much kidnapping her and putting her onto a boat. And the boat is weird because I want to say this is kind of around the time where the movie becomes in color, which yes. like feels important and feels significant.
Once she gets out of Godwin's experiment, her life becomes color. It's yes. no longer a black and white
film. She's free.
So if you're watching the film and you're like, how long is this going to be black and white?
As Bella said, she is a being of free will.
Yes. And then, so you're on the weird cruise ship.
Yes.
The decor is second to none.
Yes.
The outfits are like very,
it's giving
very,
like Tim Burton.
It's giving like slutty Star Wars.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I love it. I
You're
absolutely
on Mars.
Love it. Yeah.
You're on Mars.
And like there's those hot air balloons reference. Yeah. And like,
well,
it's
that's
just
why
very...
I was confused by the timing. That's when I was like, wait, is this futuristic? You know, because it's just filmed in a way. And I actually did like do a little bit of research after where like, they made things weird because they wanted it to be through her perspective and how weird everything looked to her, somebody who had never been outside before.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah. So
I don't know.
Everything is so foreign and she is just like loving everything. But as I mentioned, she's breaking Duncan's heart because she's agreeing to have sex with other people. She's
yes.
drinking. She's experiencing life like at full blast.
She's
all of
reading.
A sudden. She's reading. She meets Martha. And
Martha.
She's like, and she has no filter. But it's funny because at first the things that
Martha's
Duncan.
Martha's her cruise friend.
But the things that Duncan loves about her, like, oh, you say such silly, you say whatever's on your mind,
yes.
right? When she says it and he doesn't like it anymore, it's not fun anymore.
No.
And that's where you are seeing the theme of like
the possession of women and yes. how liberating it is that she just has this perspective of not being attached to him.
Well, there's a time where Duncan says, he says to her, you're starting to lose your adorable way of speaking, Bella. I'm like, I miss it.
And
like,
she gets her hands because she's reading on a fucking book.
Because she's reading. And she's reading about thing. Philosophy and her cruise friend, what's Martha, is it?
Oh my God, Martha is wonderful. And but she literally asks her,
to talk about when he tries to push her overboard, because that scene. So Bella makes her cruise friends, and it's Martha, and then there's also this like man friend there too.
And you're kind of getting that, like, is Martha a pimp? Like,
yeah,
Martha's like really.
Yeah, Martha like has some ways, because Martha's so unbothered by everybody and everything, and she loves Bella. Like, she really takes to Bella. So Wedderburn comes over, and he's like, I'm going to push her off the boat because she's poisoning your mind. And he starts scooching her towards the edge, like, with all of his might. Nobody is reacting. No one's trying to stop him. She is laughing while he tries to do it. And it's just this moment of him not being able, yet again, to get control of Bella. Like, she yes. just will absolutely not be somebody's property.
But he was painted as, like, this playboy, and, like, he yes. was going to break her heart and leave her. And he was just, like, so... He was so sure that he had the upper hand on her.
I love
and
it.
And as the story unrolls, she is just not... She is not triggered by any of the passive aggression, any of, like, the social cues. She literally sits down with Martha, and she's like, you have not had furious jumping in all of those years?
And
like, what is your problem?
And any time he tries to, like, express himself to her, because he's trying to express emotions that he's probably never had, and Bella will just be like, I'm not understanding that complicated feeling. You know?
And I really love her. Like, yes. It's just that she's just obtuse, and she's confident, and yes. she's just, like, wonderful. And you can tell that other people are jealous of yes. how wonderful Free. She sees the world. Enter Martha's friend, who I can't think of his name.
I can't think of his name either, but he was wonderful, but also, like, he was kind of out there to, like, say, like, hey, like, Bella, this is what's going on out there.
He literally tells her that, because she's like, oh, you wanted Bella to be, like, a better, like, you wanted me to see this so I could change the world.
Yes.
And she's like, he's like, no, I just, like, was
I wanted you to know that it was fucked
pissed
up.
Pissed off that you were so happy.
Yeah.
And that's, he gives her her first blow at, like, at existence, right?
Yes.
Because someone's going to knock you down a peg at some point.
They're cruising through whatever. They pass a country. I forget where they are exactly.
And you're noticing a theme of pollution
yes.
and insustainability.
Yes.
And there's just, like, this theme that we're using the last of our resources
yes.
on Earth here. Like, we are cruising, and there is just no land to be seen.
They're just trying to hold up a whole big mirror within this movie.
But what is with all the fish tanks? Sidebar. There's a lot of fish tanks, and my husband's like, I didn't notice. And I'm like, all I noticed
I'm gonna
was
have
the fish
to go
tanks.
Back and watch.
There's literally at one point in, like, the first bazaar setup that they're at, like, there's a woman just on the side of the road selling fish in bowls.
Yeah, there's just so many weird things like that that
but
caught
then
my
dead
attention.
Fish, like,
yes.
There's a heavy fish theme.
There is. Something's going on there. There's many. There's too
there's
many
There's something
themes.
They're not telling
us. There's something they're not telling us. But, like.
But I'm getting back on topic.
They see the suffering.
They see the suffering. And he wants to show her it because he's like, oh, you think everything's so wonderful. So they see this terrible, like, there are babies.
Poverty. Just like people
being wrapped up. This is just a poverty. It's hot. There's nothing but desert underneath them. And it literally is a broken off stairs.
Yes.
And I think it's like a nod at how the middle class has gotten so, like, where the hell is the middle class,
yes.
right? We're creating this big divide in money that you either have all of it or none of it.
Yes.
And here it is. And she's looking down as somebody who had no recognition of this.
Yes.
And she is horrified.
She didn't even know it existed.
She wants to bring them money. She wants to bring them Duncan's money.
So she brings them Duncan's money. So she's like, I know what Bella can do to fix this. Bella can go take all of Duncan's money. And she finds these two men that work on the boat. And because Bella doesn't know that people can be manipulative, she hears them say, like, well, I think she tells them, like, I need to give money to those people there. They need this money. And she has a box of money. So these men are obviously here to take advantage of Bella, as all of the men in the movie.
Yes.
And they're like, hey, we'll take the money and give it to them.
Yes. But society has not gotten to Bella. So
she's not been burned.
So Bella says, if I know the world, I can improve it. Yes. And Martha's friend, we really should know his name, but he says, we are a fucked species. Protect yourself with the truth.
Yes.
And when she goes back to the room, she looks at the truth. She says, who am I, lying in a feather bed while dead babies lie in a ditch? Because that's what she saw. Mm-hmm. And that's before she brings the money. But I feel like it's important to say that, like, she is not seeing the societal norms of just, like, cover this all up, put money on this, get mm-hmm. a fancy outfit. Like, you're seeing Duncan fall victim to this. He's because gambling. That means nothing. He's living outside of his means.
Because the money means nothing to her just as much as, like, someone being in love with her.
And she's like, who am I to be better than those people?
Yes.
So the cruise thing is derailed.
No entitlement. No entitlement.
And she's confident without entitlement, and she's, yes. like, out to change the world. With that attitude, yes. let me tell you. Bravo, Bella Baxter.
His name is Harry.
Harry. So Harry gives her perspective.
Yes.
But she is not going to be scathed by it. She is not feeling She's better than anyone. It. She's going to fix it. So first they get thrown off the cruise because
she gives all their money. And the best part is that she goes into the room and Duncan is like, Bella, where's our money? Where's our money? And she so matter-of-factly is like, ugh. I gave it to all those people down there. She's like, I'm exhausted. And yeah. he's just like, he loses his fucking mind, obviously, because money and title and image and status means everything to Duncan.
Yes.
You know?
Without all of that money and status, they are thrown off of the ship.
So they are thrown out.
The next place they land is, where are they? Are they in France?
France or Spain? I forget. It might be France, but there is somewhere like in Europe.
Yes. So now, because this whole thing, this is like a Mediterranean voyage. Yes.
They don't complete the travel.
No. No. So now her next stop, they're on the side of the road. They're yes, poor.
And they have no money.
He has given up right away. He's like, we're poor. We're done. We're going to die here. Yeah. Let's just shrivel up on this park
bench. He is the poor thing.
And she is like, this is an adventure, Duncan. Yes. Like, we are going to have a good time.
Well, he starts having a meltdown. And Bella's like, you know what? I'm going to find something to eat. So she walks around and she finds herself a woman. And her name is, I need
Madam.
Her name. Madam.
I forget her last name.
But can I just say, before we go any further, her name is, okay, Sweeney?
Madam Sweeney, Madam Sweeney.
Okay.
Madam Sweeney.
I hear her voice, and I'm like, I know this voice. She was on Harry Potter. This is a deep cut.
I think I
listen
even know
to her voice. She's like
is.
An old lady, like somewhere walking amongst the town. I heard the voice. It came back to me. It was like one of those movies I've seen over and over in that voice. And I was like, this woman was in Harry Potter, and I confirmed she was.
Wow.
So anyways.
So I think I know exactly where it was, but I can't think of it. Yes. She was like maybe a professor, maybe?
She was something of that nature. A side character.
But yeah, so Madam Sweeney. So the brothel.
The brothel.
So enter the brothel. So
She runs it.
And unpopular opinion, I think the brothel is wonderful.
Honestly.
So,
well, especially after, I will say, specifically after Bella, like, gives it some reform.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. She really brings it up to tease. And she's like, no, like, sex workers can, like, be in control of their body and, like, their boundaries and, like, name their terms here.
Yeah, so she just has a conversation with this woman,
yes.
Madam Sweeney, who you find out is, like, the brothel pimp.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I am hungry and, like, I love to furious jump.
Yeah.
So she's can like, you... I will definitely, like, do this for money.
Yes.
Quickly. So without really knowing that she signed up for prostitution,
yes,
she did. She goes upstairs. She does not like the man, and she like tells him that she does not like him.
Yes. She's like, you smell bad.
They furious jump for like 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And then And then she comes back to Duncan with like a croissant.
She comes back and I don't know how she tells him what she did, and she goes, I wanted a tart and then an adventure befound me.
But I have to say,
say that her way, and me and my husband talked about this the next day, that her way of telling him, she's just telling him, like, I had sex with somebody else. It was not as good as having sex with you. It wasn't as good as having it
with you. And it was because I was hungry.
It was quick, and then they gave me $30, and now we have lunch.
Yeah.
And he is broken. He's like, he's already broken by her.
He's like,
And she's like,
he starts screaming at her in the streets, calling her a whore, calling her everything in the book. And she sits there eating her pastry, unbothered. Like, if you don't want to eat it, I will then.
And she stumbles into a life of prostitution. And I have to say that with saying that the brothel is wonderful, it's probably my favorite setting of the movie.
Yes.
What would be your favorite setting of the movie?
That's tough. I mean, I will say I was very intrigued by, like, the manor where they live when it first came in, because it was so, like, what time period are we in? What are they doing in here? Like, that really spoke to me. But, like, comedic-wise and, like, for character growth, being in the brothel was just, like, I mean, it was everything. It was everything.
I loved it so much. So, first of all, the fashion is very steampunk Victorian in there.
Yeah.
Like, you are very much seeing, like, the big shoulders, vertical but they're, stripes, like, hollow.
Some neons.
Like, rib caging. Yes. Yeah.
And then the boobs out.
And, so, full frontal Emma Stone. Yeah. I must say that Emma Stone is an actress that I feel like, but Kenny said this was the first movie he felt like you did not look at her as her in this movie.
No, she was Bella.
She was Bella Baxter.
Yes.
But full frontal, Emma Stone, an oil painting of a woman.
Literally.
Absolutely.
I'm like, good for you, girl.
It's good. She's just like draped over all of these like chairs.
It's giving paint me like one of your French girls. You know?
She is one of the French girls. It is a vision to see. Yeah. It's worth It's worth honestly, watching the movie. But I have to say that some of the funniest scenes come out of the brothel, because of course it's sexualized. And of course the guys showing up to the brothel are like these terrible Victorian
smelly, dirty men. Like,
and Bella is funny about it. Bella does not understand really what she's doing, and you can tell, but she knows how to play it. And Bella literally, she like proposes at one of these like pickings that like, she's like, what if we chose you?
Yes.
Like to have sex with you, because then you would feel chosen.
Yeah. And then you'd know that we actually wanted to.
We weren't scared.
And then she goes, and then I will smell you. And if you smell okay, we will proceed. And if not, I will rub lavender oil on you. And those are my terms. Those are my terms. She says, my body, my choice.
And Madame Swiney looks at the man and she goes, Bella is new and may have a mental illness. And she notices, she kind of starts to play the game of the brothel, right? Like, she notices that she's making money. Yes. She notices that it's easy, and she's very unattached, but she makes friends with a woman there who I also don't remember her name.
I'll find it.
But she makes friends with her, and it's very obvious that she's trying to learn
it.
Toinette. Of course it is.
Yeah.
So she's trying to learn the balance of, like, feelings and making it in this world. She realizes
she's like, how am I going to survive? I know I need, like, she's logical about it. She's like, I need money to have food. I need food to survive. I enjoy furious jumping, and this woman will pay me for furious jumping.
And Madame Swiney just like whips out her grandbaby in a small back room.
She's like, you're gonna take money from this baby?
But also whips out the meaning of life, right?
She does.
Because Bella saw those babies suffering. She saw the poor suffering, and she was like, I don't know how I can help them. I don't know how I can help myself. She was throwing money places, but now she sees that
her actions feed this baby in a way.
And feed herself. Yes. Her actions are feeding her own growth.
She likes what she's doing. So it's like, go Bella.
So I do feel like there was a big empowerment piece there that needs to be like, amplified, because she found enjoyment in sex.
Yes.
And then she found empowerment in
and growth.
And then sex. She found that she could profit off of her enjoyment.
Yes. And every time that she is owned, it is condoned, right? Yes. It is accepted. It is a norm. Like, she's this man's property who gambles, so she's wealthy. She's this scientist experiment, so she's taken care of. But mm-hmm. once she is a whore in a brothel taking care of herself, it's looked at askew.
Yes. Well, Duncan, one time her and Toinette are walking down the road and Duncan's just sitting out there waiting for her, throwing pebbles at her window. And he's like, you he's whores. So desperate. And she's like, she goes, we are our own means of production. And they are,
boom.
You know, they are.
Boom.
And Duncan can't comprehend it. And it's at that moment, because there's this hilarious scene where he is standing outside of her window and he has the most dramatic, like, Bella. And he's just sobbing and begging and begging. And she says, we should definitely never marry. I am a flawed, experimenting person, and I will need a husband with a more forgiving disposition. And I'm just like, this is just like, in a weird way, like, the deep core meaning of this movie is what we are trying to instill, like, in our kids. Like, and it sounds so weird to say, but it's like, you decide your path. Like, yes. Don't let anybody tell you how and what to do.
Yes, shed back the social norms, yes. and be who you want to be. Yes. And I'm going to support that person, because yes. like we've said, the idea that you're going to make the person that you are, or the perfect person, is not going to happen.
Yes.
You're going to notice who this person is becoming, and then you're going to want to just nurture and support
yes.
that person on their journey.
Mm-hmm.
And Bella has found none of that until a freaking pimp lady, right? Kind of told her.
Yes.
And Toinette
empowered her.
Empowered her, because she was being raised by men who wanted to control her.
And then Bella's learning about politics, and she's learning about her means of her own production, and there's just this growth.
And she met Martha too, so yes. she meets these women along
powerful
the way
women
who empower her.
Yes. And like, we are fully seeing the evolution of Bella Baxter, like, right in front of our eyes. And she is just slowly breaking free from, like, the societal constraints that people are trying to put on her. Yes. That she doesn't even know exist.
Yes. And in the background, you're finding out that God and Max really miss Bella.
They really miss her.
To the point where they're like, they're like, let's make a new Bella.
Yes.
Which, like, really, like, leaves me the question, was this woman murdered? Was
yes.
this pregnant woman murdered in the name of making a Bella? Or did they just happen to stumble upon another dead woman, alive baby
just
scenario?
At the right temperature. Like, it just feels like that would be some pretty significant math, you
Enter
know?
Enter Felicity. Who is a bag of rocks.
She is literally, like, my chickens have more brain cells than her.
But
you
that
know?
Is interesting too, right? Because
yes.
she's learning and growing at a different pace than Bella did.
She is.
She's a little infantile.
She
still.
Is.
And there is something funny, because eventually Bella wants to go back to God.
Yes.
She's had her fun, and she's like, you know what? I think I'll go marry Max. That seemed like a chill situation.
Yeah.
Now that I realize what making it in this, like, harsh world is,
yes.
he, like, made sense. Like, she, like, is very logistical about it.
Yes.
But then she wants to visit God. She wants to make sure that, like, things are copacetic.
Mm-hmm.
So when she visits, she sees Felicity, and she's like, what the fuck is
what
going
is
on
that?
With her? And the maid's like, I like her more. She's nice to me.
She masturbates less at the dinner table.
And she's just, like, hacking at a piece of meat, yeah. like, hardcore.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so you notice that Bella does grow to the point that she understands where God was coming from. God was who she came from, and she wants to know the story of where she came from. Oh, yes. Wait, I'm missing a big part with Toinette. Toinette's like, I have a baby skull. Do you, oh. you have a baby skull?
Yes. So there is the grand reveal, because Bella doesn't know where she came from.
Yeah.
She doesn't.
And as she becomes more, like,
they're lying.
Well-rounded. She wants to fill in those blanks of where she came from.
And she notices what? That she has, it was like a C-section kind of scar, right?
Well,
like
she starts being romantic with Toinette.
Yeah.
Because she's like, this lady is
like. Yeah, she's like, wait, we can do this too?
Yeah, so she just does that. And
for
then,
free?
Then they're snuggling and she's like, I've got a baby scar. You have a baby scar.
Yeah.
She's like, I didn't have a baby. That's an injury scar. And she's like, nope, no, it's not.
That's a baby scar.
So that kind of starts her wheels turning. Yes. Of like, I need to know more.
And creating questions.
Yeah, but she does miss God. And she's like, you know what? I'll go get married.
Yeah.
So the wedding happens. And you're like, this is happening. She's going to marry Max.
And this is going to be the end of the movie, I guess.
And honestly, she, when she first goes back, she says that she'll be a doctor, right? She's like, I will be a doctor.
Yes. She wants, I think she's being set up to take over God's practice.
And God says, he says when he's referencing his dad, because he references his dad a lot and his dad did experiments on him.
Yes.
And you could just tell his dad's awful, but he speaks of him as the scientist that he was.
In a respectful way.
But in this point, when she says, I will be a doctor like you, she's like, oh, no. He's like, my dad was a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Like, don't. And, like, that's growth for God to say to Bella.
And that's why, like, because, like, you know, when I'm watching these movies, none of these characters are, like, morally black or white. Everybody is very gray. Like, you think about God, you think about Max, you think about all of these people, and nobody is good or bad. Everybody's has these kind of, like, mixed, you can interpret them how you want, but then you see that, and you see where he came from, and you see the recognition that that was bad, and that in his mind, he is doing better than the way that he was raised, and it's just kind of this pattern that we are seeing.
Yes, and when you think about God and the whole scenario at first, it's such a controlled environment, and he's such a controlled being, and it's very repetitive, but as things go on, Bella's thought process complicates his thought process.
Yes.
And they're kind of growing together, which is like a really beautiful thing to see.
Yes.
And eventually, that area is also in color because there's this kind of free thinking that's going on within the group.
Yes.
So when she agrees to marry Max again, like he's like, because
he's like, if you want out, he's like, I'll rip up the papers.
And she's like, I had sex with a lot of people. Like, the furious jumping was up there. My body count is high. And
she
literally says.
Yes. She says, like, I was getting paid, what were they called? Like, 30-something for it? And he's like, 30 seems pretty low. And I was
she's
just like,
really?
He's so, like, you deserve much more.
But he says, it's your body, Bella Baxter. And nobody has said that to him. Fuck you, Duncan.
Yes.
Fuck you. Because you were, like, obsessed with owning this woman. Everyone has been obsessed with owning
this woman. Every single person.
And finally somebody is like, you had the, she was looking for autonomy so bad and she finally
found
like,
it. You're like, is this the like weird Frankenstein happy-ish ending we're gonna get?
But we don't.
But we don't. They're standing at the altar and then enter.
Her hubby.
Her husband.
What is his name? He's like Sergeant Colonel, I don't know.
I'm gonna find it, but he was on Girls. I don't know if you were a Girls fan.
Yes.
He plays What's-Her-Face's boyfriend. He was he was kind of a poor thing on that show, honestly.
Yes.
But I was like, I know you.
Yeah, so we find out at the wedding that she's actually Victoria.
Yes.
So Victoria is who Bella really is.
Yes.
She is the pregnant woman that unalived herself off the bridge. But we also found out that freaking God doesn't have much time. He has cancer. So, like, this isn't the time for Victoria's husband to show up. This
Alfie.
Is so much drama. Alfie shows up. She's about to marry Max. All is well.
And he's
I think God's using a cane.
He's there. He's like, I took a lot of morphine, but I'm good.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm here.
There's so much morphine and chloroform in this movie.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So, but this is what happens. She wants to know who she was.
Yes.
And there's something about Bella that we haven't quite, like, put our fingers on, because we now know that her brain and her heart are
of two different people. So we're trying to think, like, is this going to dawn on her, like, who she was?
Right. Is she going to remember?
But you slowly find out that it won't because she is a new experience.
She is. It's the body of Victoria, but the brain is brand new.
So we go to Victoria's house. We find out Alfie is just the fucking worst.
He is the fucking worst.
He literally holds his servants at gunpoint. And this is very, like, so
it gets very violent, really. Really quick and like tense.
And that's why like cinema is doing like dystopian like too good.
Yes.
Now. Like because this is like you can tell we are at the wit's end of society. This man is holding his servants there by gunpoint.
Literally.
Like they are like you can tell like they want him dead. They
and he's
hate
also
him.
Like Victoria, don't you remember how we used to love this? So then you get a little insight into who Victoria was and how opposite she was of who Bella is.
She was awful. She loved like this conservative, uppity hierarchy that we very clearly see exists.
Yes.
He talks about torturing the servants. He talks about like
all about society and class and all of that, all the things that Bella could not give a rat's ass about.
And as the kind of conversation evolves, Bella very quickly realizes she doesn't want to be Victoria.
She's like, yeah, I'm out.
She's like, I have no ties to this place. This brain is brand new, and I'm feeling nothing, and I need to get out of here. But you can tell Alfie.
She doesn't want a furious jump with him even a little bit.
And Alfie's just not the type of dude that's going to say, like,
you can go.
No, he's no Godwin.
No, absolutely not.
So he's all like, now you're at gunpoint. And she's like, oh, no, no, no. None of this.
Not going to happen
to me. And she gets out of there.
She does. And I was super nervous at this part. I was like, please don't let this be how it ends for her because she has escaped like every single person who has tried to control and stop and break her. And like, please don't let this be it. And she gets out. But what does she do while getting out? She shoots him in the foot.
Yes. Well, he was like, he was trying to
shoot her, and she pushed it down at his foot, right?
He was trying to take her clitoris off.
Well, yes, that's what he wanted to do.
Yeah,
he wanted to like sterilize, and he wanted to make sure that she couldn't feel any pleasure from it. He wanted to take that away from her.
And you could tell that the baby was the main focus of Alfie.
Yes.
And she learns that Victoria hated the baby.
Yes,
that she called it a monster or something. So we realize that Victoria did not have the autonomy of her body.
No.
She was doing what Alfie wanted. She was owned.
Yes.
And you realize that this woman escaped all of that to be led back to it.
Back to the starting point. And she's like, that's not going to be me. And he pretty much is like, the only way you're getting out here is if I shoot you while you're walking out. So she decides she's going to take her chances. And he goes to shoot her. She pushes the gun down and ends up shooting himself.
Yes.
So what does she do? She drags his body back to Godwin's house. And she says, I'm a fucking doctor. Let me take care of this.
Yeah. Changes him into a goat man.
And one thing we didn't touch on is around the house, you will see Godwin's creations. You'll see like a half dog, half chicken,
that's where it definitely gets Tim Burton.
Yes. Yes.
Like, yeah, 100%. Like he's a mad scientist. You can tell. Like,
all of his experiments are walking around the house. So it's this whole moment where, you know, she brings him back and they're like, he's never going to stop. You know, he's going to keep coming for you. And Bella's like, well, I can't have that. So she's like, I know what to do. And what does she do? She puts a goat brain inside of his head. So you pan to the closing scene and it's just, what's his Alfie out in the grass?
Eating the grass, being a good little boy. Toinette, and Max is there.
Yeah.
And she has created this life that she loves.
Yes.
And she has claimed herself.
That fits to no societal standard.
She lives in
such what
this,
works for her.
Yes. And then God dies. And God that was
dies.
Kind of sad.
But it was like an appropriate sad moment, you know. And it was very, it was a weird coming of age, Frankenstein, creepy story.
I truly believe it will be a classic.
I think so too.
I thought it was so good. And I have to give you a little F, Mary Kill.
Okay.
So Max, Duncan, and Alfie.
Max, Duncan, and Alfie. Oh my God. Okay.
F, Mary Kill.
Okay. So I'll marry Max. I mean, I guess I F Duncan, and I guess I kill Alfie. You know, I do what she did.
I thought she knew
what she was doing. What about you?
Fair. I think I would do the same thing. I would marry Max. You would F Duncan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I would kill Alfie. I think that would be fair.
That's perfect.
And I have to say that I enjoyed watching this movie, and I enjoyed, like, trying to look at all of the themes, because I felt like there was so many themes. But I think overall it was a dramatized look at today's society.
Yes.
And what we feel is important, and, you know, our obsession with the way that things look, and population, and climate change. And I felt like it embodied so many things that we're looking at. And then you had this mind having a quick birth to understanding of it.
Yes.
And it really made...
Where you don't have the time to be changed and conformed and molded by society. You come in as an adult, but somebody who has not been so messed up, you know, and so changed and so created. Like, you are just coming in brand new with the ability to just think so clearly. And that's what Bella does. And she says, I'm a changeable feast, as are all of we. And I feel like Bella, like, in so many ways, just, like, metaphorically represents what we try to say for ourselves, that, like, we are ever changing and we can't hold ourselves to, like, a certain standard because it's just ever changing. And the people that we are wanting to be and growing to be is always changing. And I just feel like that was plastered all over this movie, and I loved it.
Yes, I thought that the theme of, like, self-growth and owning yourself and not being exactly who you were raised by, like, that evolution of a generation.
Yes.
And I felt like her having the rebirth was just so crazy. And I loved, loved, loved the theme that, like, she had the stereotypical male outlook on her body and on the sexual experience. And she did not let the societal norms
make her feel guilty about it.
Make her feel guilty about it in a way that a female may be pushed.
Yes.
She was not pushed in a female direction or the standard female direction.
She wouldn't allow it.
And it didn't change her experience in life.
It's giving girl power.
It was giving so much girl power.
And I have to say,
about this movie,
I realize we forgot to mention one important scene that, like, we cannot carry on without mentioning: the dance scene.
Oh, yes.
The dance scene. So there is a scene, and, like, as much as, like, we know she's not going to end up with Duncan, but there is a moment where she's enjoying herself, and I'm enjoying watching her enjoy herself, and they dance, and they dance with their whole body. And, like, if you watch anything, and maybe, I don't know if you're not going to go watch this whole movie, please go watch their dance scene, because it is the best thing I've ever seen.
Yes.
Ever.
Emma Stone is magic.
She
is
magic.
And I do feel like when you look at Bella Baxter, you can't help but look at the pure, like, enjoyment that character is having in the early stages of the movie. Like, it's said, she does, like, the vigorous clapping like a toddler.
It's and, a like, funny movie.
And I even love when they're out to dinner in that scene, and he's like, she's like, oh, my God. What does she say?
Well, he's like, you are only allowed to say these few responses back. So
yeah, magnificent.
Magnificent.
And she's like, my uncle of whatever age has passed away. And she's like, that is marvelous.
Yes. It's just, honestly, well, what would you rate it?
I would rate it 5 stars.
I'm giving it 5 as well. The Rudies are a view. Poor things. We're giving it 5 stars.
Absolutely.
Such a good movie. It deserves all of the hype that it got. It deserves the awards. And I am just, I feel like she just took a next level as, like, an actress, honestly. Like,
I think
she's just, and this isn't the first movie she's done with this director. I was also looking into that, too, which I thought was really interesting. And I wanted to know how she felt about the movie, because I felt a lot from the movie.
Yes.
And to see that, like, she was as impacted by it, and in one of the interviews I was watching, she says, like, I'm nervous that another movie won't be able to make me feel the way that this made me feel, because it was just such, like, the way that we felt watching it. I can't imagine being the person to play that role and to get into that mindset and to really do that kind of reflecting. Like, I don't know. I just think a great movie.
It was an absolute great movie, and I can't wait to, like, I feel like if you're going to watch it and make somebody else you love watch it.
Yes. Yeah.
And then, like, have discussions about it.
Because you need someone to talk about it.
Because it has a lot of themes that are, like, worth having a little chat about. And yes. I think that that was why it was so important yes. to have a Rudy's review of
it. I loved reviewing it.
I loved reviewing
Great
it.
Movie.
It's probably going to take you 800 hours to watch it, but yes. that's cinema.
But honestly, if there can be a little bit more, like, Bella Baxter in me after watching the movie, then that's all that matters.
And I think that that's what it's all about
yes.
is shedding what you think you're supposed to be and just be who you truly
be
are
you
on
are.
Your inner core.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like if you can take away a little Bella Baxter, that
you're doing something
it's
right.
worth watching.
Yes. Thanks for attending our virtual mom support group with Stephanie
and Lauren. Pull up a chair, light the sage. We are going through it
and growing through it.
And we're always rooting for you. It's two children with a bedtime, like just revolting
yes.
silently, but also like very loud.
And their bedroom is like kind of hyped up and like maybe you wrap some string lights in there because you were trying to pull a vibe. So anyways, we wind up in Nora's room, the three of us, and I'm like, you know, let's just wind down. Let's watch some TV in your room. I'm not saying you have to go to sleep yet, but let's kind of just wind it down.
Yeah.
And so like the three of us are just laying down and we're watching Is It Cake because it just felt like something that we could all agree on. And then all of a sudden, Lennon was like, Stephanie, are you awake? And I was like, yeah, I'm awake. What's up, Len? She's like, nothing. My mom would have been asleep already.
Bitch.